Okay, everybody, you're going to love this. This is an interview with a legal software vendor. Don't yawn, don't fall asleep. It's going to be much more interesting. This guy is really a well of wisdom for all of us that practice law. We're busy as heck. We're looking for automation, but we don't want to get bogged down. Talk to some tech guy who's got a pocket protector and his glasses tied together with some tape. Chris Stock from Leap is none of those scary tech things. He talks our language. He talks growth. He talks a big future, and you're going to really enjoy this. Hey everybody, this is Jeff Horn, your proud and humble host of the Bold Sidebar podcast. I'm really happy to be here today with a very interesting guest, a little different from some of our normal guests. Today I'm with Chris Stock. He is the CEO of Leap, a legal software practice management program that we recently brought in. And please beware, I might be taken in by his cool Australian accent. But anyway, he's been at this for a bunch of years. The proof is in the gray in his beard and the lack of hair on top of his head. I think he's got a sense of humor. He's laughing. We don't know each other that well, so I don't want to offend. But I'm really excited to get going with this. And with that, I'm going to throw it over to Chris and let him introduce himself.
Thanks, Jeff. I thought that being that this wasn't a visual thing, that I might have gotten away with not dyeing my beard today. and I do like to pretend that the hair is by choice, which is why I keep it shaved nice and close. Mm-hmm. No one knows any better.
You got the good Mr. Clean look. It looks cool.
I thank you very much for having me here today. As you mentioned, I'm from Leap. I've worked with Leap for 10 years now, and we specialize in software for solo and small law firms. Before I was at Leap, I actually worked in a combination of solo and small law firms, government firms, and a very large firm as well. And I've been very passionate about helping firms become successful by way of efficiency. While working in a solo practice at that point in time, I was in my first job. I was 18 years old, which by virtue of my age meant that I was a tech guy, even though my only skill in tech at the time was being able to commence a Google search and get the answer.
Good start.
Most people can just do that by second nature today, but back then it wasn't so easy. And then I got really passionate about technology from there. And when I decided it was time to either get a law degree or move on from working in law firms, I chose technology. And that's how I wound up at Leap, and I've been enjoying working with small law firms ever since.
So did you pursue some sort of formal education in tech?
No, I didn't. I really just learned on the job at Leap. I started at Leap as a software and implementation consultant. So I used to install the software and train people how to use it. And fortunately at the time, Leap was an up-and-coming company. It was growing rapidly, and I was able to get great mentorship from a number of people in the business and learned the technology side of it from there.
I love that, because you were open to something that you had not necessarily chosen, right?
That's right.
And Leap, that was a technology company, is a technology company, was open to a guy with a little spark, even though you didn't have a pile of credentials to be a tech guy.
That's right. I remember my interview to this day. It was with the chairman of the company, Richard Hugo Hammond. At the time, he was the managing director. And he was most interested in my legal experience. And one of the things at Leap is that we employ people with really great legal experience, because that type of experience is something that can't really be taught. Whereas the tech side of things can be taught to somebody that's got an aptitude for tech. And as the technology in the world has actually gotten better and better, the need for tech knowledge isn't as great anymore. When I first started, you had to know how to operate a server and a network, and you'd have to get in there and work on a server for an hour, and then you'd have to go and set up each individual workstation. And the cloud meant that a lot of the cloud now means that a lot of that type of work's performed by back-end engineers, and people like myself are out there helping the firms get more efficient and understand how to run their practice with technology.
I definitely want to talk tech. You have your hands in a lot of it. But one thing, when I looked at your bio, it had a word, and I love these subtle distinctions in our broad English-speaking world. You had the term conveyancing. You got to tell me what that means.
Sure. So conveyancing in the US is real estate law.
Okay.
The big difference is that the conveyance of title actually does happen in the US, and it still is a legal term, a conveyance of title, and in particular in Massachusetts, it's still used to this day. It's not used so much in New York and New Jersey. However, I was told when I first arrived here by an entertainment lawyer of all people in New York that she remembers being taught about conveyancing at law school and said that she encourages me to still use the word. I haven't taken her up on that advice because it just makes me sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. But it's ultimately, it's real estate law.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Well, I'm going to use that word this weekend. I'm going to try to wow somebody for sure. So, okay, great. So you spent a lot of time with lawyers in Australia. You've spent now a lot of time with lawyers in the U.S., UK as well?
That's right, yes.
So, you know, I'd love for you to just dive in and, you know, tell me what are the differences? What differences do you find when you're sitting with a lawyer in Australia or UK or US?
The main difference between lawyers from in the United States and the other two countries is the fact that you have a split bar in Australia and the United Kingdom. So you have a solicitor and you have a barrister. Mm-hmm. And the solicitors generally brief out work to the barristers, whereas in the United States, everybody's a trial attorney. So there's a very fundamental difference there with the personalities that you're generally dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often, there's a lot more passion and excitement in trial attorneys because they're kind of living the dream. You know, I think about when I was originally wanting to be a lawyer when I was in high school. A lot of what I thought law was influenced by American TV. So I thought that I'd be arguing in a courtroom and you know, sitting in judges' chambers and arguing with them. You know, a bit too much law and order there, I think.
Right.
But what ultimately ends up happening is that you sit in an office and take instructions from clients and put together research and then brief out a barrister. So in the US, you do that from go to woe. You sit with the client from the first day, you represent them in court. And there's a lot more excitement, I think, when you're representing people in court on a daily basis. I think that from a software perspective, we have a look at Australia. And Australia's always been very, very progressive when it comes to adopting technology, which is one of the reasons we were able to be very, very successful in Australia quite quickly. When we moved into the UK market, we discovered that there really weren't a lot of cloud software providers there. So we were able to do exceptionally well there very, very fast. And we have 2,000 firms in the UK that use Leap every single day, over 10,000 users. And we actually only commenced the operation there. I moved there to commence the operation in July 2014. So things have happened there very rapidly. The US is a bit different because if you look at it from the perspective of an Australian, every time we start working with attorneys in another state, it's actually like working with attorneys in another country. Things can be that different. So in Australia, a lot of what attorneys do is regulated via statute and legislation. And we only have 7 states there. And in the UK, it's actually one jurisdiction for the UK. So it's one set of forms for everybody. And then with Leap being its main point of difference, the high-end integration and automation of legal forms, it meant that arriving in America, we needed to put a lot of focus into getting things right per market. So ultimately, the US is 50 different markets, as opposed to Australia that has 7 different markets and the UK is one whole market.
Interesting. Let me ask you this, to dig into the lawyer psyche that you've met, and you've met tons of them in different ends of it, as you just described. So how about stress levels? Are the U.S. lawyers more stressed out than the Australian lawyers, or more stressed out than the barristers or solicitors? What do you sense there?
I actually find that stress is relative to how people run their business. So, you know, we deal with business owners most of the time. Large law firms, you don't often deal with the founder of the business. But when we're dealing with solo and small firms, we're talking to the owners and the founders of the businesses every day. And the stress isn't any higher in one country or the other. The stress is higher in offices where they aren't organized, and offices where they try to save money by not paying their staff properly because they have constant staff turnover. And really all of that stress comes from how a business is run, not from the practice of the law. Most lawyers practice law because they love it.
I like that you say that. And I just want to dovetail off of that. For me, I want to invest heavily in automation technology so that all I have to do is interact with my clients, interact with my adversaries, courts, law stuff, business development stuff, client service, client. That's what I want to do every single day that I walk in here. So as a business owner, for me, I'm looking out into the world and saying, what tools can I get into my toolbox that just take care of all that back end stuff so that we can just keep marching ahead for our clients? You know, is that what you're talking about? Is that what people don't do enough of?
That's right. That's one part of it. I think that the other part of it is being disorganized. I think back to the very first time that I worked in a legal office, and that was in 2001, and there weren't a lot of all-encompassing programs available right at the time that allowed you to become more efficient. But I think about all aspects of the business, and I think first of all about the document management side of things. And we used to manage our documents just off a shared hard drive, and you'd open up a Word document and you'd change everything, all the information for a different matter, and use it as a template and hope that you'd remember to change all the names and dates of birth so you didn't breach any confidentiality. And then you looked at the accounting side of things, and if you wanted any accounting information, you had to go into a bookkeeper who would open up a filing cabinet and pull out paper trust accounting cards and actually have to manually write in and calculate the balances. And then faxes would come in at the fax machine, and the receptionist would keep a separate book for recording new intakes. And then you would have a safe custody department where they would store wills, and they'd have a different book where all that information was stored in. And you know, I was working in all those different areas. So I would need access to safe custody, and I need access to trust accounting, and I need access to the information on the file. Every time I needed something from a different area, it would take me 5 minutes to go and get it. And today, all of that can be organized into one place. And organizing it all into one place gives you one source of truth. And one source of truth is incredibly important. If you don't have one source of truth, you're always chasing your tail. And the biggest cause of stress I see in law firms is where they don't have one source of truth.
I like that. One source of truth. Very interesting. Yeah, we used to call that the sneaker network. Instead of a network, we would run over here and run over there and run back over there. So you were a sneaker networker before you were a cloud networker.
That's right. Got it.
Okay. So you're kind of pointing out some of the guys that have hard time, some of the attorneys who have a real difficult time, let me say, de-stressing, having fun, practicing law, not worrying about everything else. Besides your own program, what else is out there in technology land that you guys run into that are just big enhancers for the client success as well as the lawyer success, the law firm success, and just de-stressing this whole business? What do you see out there?
I think that the mobile phone technology was the biggest game changer that the market really has ever seen, because it meant that you could actually have a work-life balance in an age where it really doesn't exist. And when I say a work-life balance, it doesn't mean that you're having not hours 9 to 5 and being able to go and to the beach afterwards. But what it does is it allows you to be mobile and portable. And I was talking to somebody once who said, oh, you know, I don't like this cloud thing. It means that I never leave the office. And I said, okay, that's interesting. Tell me a bit more about yourself. And he told me that he had a 3-year-old son at home. And I said, well, okay, so what do you do then if you have a lot of work to do? And he said, well, I stay at the office. He said, because, you know, I'm not going to bring work home with me. I want to spend family time when I go home. I said, okay, so what time do you generally get home in the evening? And he said, 10 o'clock at night. And I said, you've got a three-year-old. Wouldn't you rather be sitting on the couch with your laptop or your mobile phone and actually working there and actually being able to spend some time with the family? It might not be the quality time that you're looking for, but the reality is it's time that you're not going to have otherwise. So I think the biggest change really is being able to be mobile. I am seeing a lot more business-savvy firms looking for CRMs. And that is a whole different paradigm from practice management. So CRMs are a pretty exciting technology for people looking to really work on their business. And Salesforce is the one that a lot of people have heard of. We use it at Leap. It's a great system. It takes a lot of time to customize and get ready, and but it's worth it at the end of the day.
Okay.
And I think that business-savvy operators will be looking more and more at implementing CRMs over the coming years for law firms. I'm getting requests about them quite frequently, actually.
Yeah, well, I'm going to add a request to that, because I've had other businesses and we had Salesforce and we failed. We spent a lot of money on it. We spent a decent amount of time on it, I felt, and then it was overwhelming to our people out in the field. So they didn't use it. It was a source of great stress. So we got into huge fights. We'd have our sales meeting and I'd be looking for the reports and they wouldn't have filled it in, and they felt frustrated. I felt frustrated. So we sort of abandoned Salesforce and went to some of the other sort of lower tech ones. Again, back to my theme, I want automation to just support me. I want it to be like flowers being delivered to my office every day. Like, wow, this is fantastic. I don't want it to be, okay, in about 20 years, we're going to hand build this railroad from here across the U.S. I don't want it to be like that at all. Is the world evolving in CRM land for simpleton technology people like me and maybe some of my other lawyer friends?
It's getting there. But I do think of systems like Salesforce, Goldmine, etc. They do require a massive commitment to set up. And the way we started using Salesforce in particular is that our chairman purchased one license one day and started fiddling with it. And today we would have maybe 200, 250 Salesforce licenses that we access. But we do have a team of four full-time staff who all they do is manage Salesforce. For a large business, that's fine.
I get
you can recoup those costs. Right. But for a small business, it's very difficult. But there are other ways which you can operate CRMs without having to invest in a really pricey CRM system and the associated staff to use it. It depends on how detailed you want to get as far as the CRM goes.
Right. Well, we want to stay in touch, right? That's how I look at this. We can do some social media stuff, which is great. We have our clients that have active cases. And then there's everyone else in between, sort of the non-social media addict and the person that doesn't have a case going on right now. We'd love to talk to those folks in an intimate way. And it seems like a CRM is the way to organize that type of campaign.
It is. There are other things that you can do. If you're a general practice firm, then you can do pretty simple things like setting reminders for yourself to remind somebody to update their will 3 weeks after they've completed a property purchase, or 3 weeks after they've completed a divorce. And you can send people birthday cards and all those sorts of things.
Right.
There's a lot of things that you can do that are quite proactive outside of purchasing a very expensive CRM system. Most of them come down to setting great calendar items, and making things a little bit more personal.
Right, right. Gotcha. Okay. Well, we talked about the sort of happy law firm and maybe the stressed out law firm. You know, where do you guys come in the educational world? Like I perceive you guys are going to be increasing demand to speak at CLEs so that folks like myself, you know, I love to update my family law knowledge and my how to operate my office well. And the technology piece is a huge piece of that. Speak to that.
Yeah, we've become experts in practice management, the actual management within a law firm, not the software itself. Almost accidentally, we're very passionate about helping solo and small law firms, which means we go in and we see a lot of them. And all of our consultants have seen hundreds of firms. Myself, I would have seen several hundred, as you mentioned, across three countries. And you observe business practices and you quite often reconcile them to your own and think, well, you know, if I was running this firm, this is what I'd be doing. And you do start noticing some pretty common factors. And we do speak quite a lot on the running of law businesses at CLE and a lot less about our software. And it's just purely come from those observations. So, you know, we always find that firms that are successful are firms that actually decide to be efficient. You mentioned efficiency before, and it's actually a decision to be efficient. And it takes a real commitment and it takes leadership on behalf of the firm management. And that is something that we see quite often is a roadblock to becoming efficient, is that when there's a change event, someone in the firm needs to be a leader around that change event. And when nobody's a leader around the change event, then it's not going to be successful. And then it makes it very, very difficult to succeed in the drive towards efficiency because you have staff up in rebellion and all sorts of things happen. So, yeah, we spend a lot of our time coaching firm leaders on how to overcome the objections from their staff when they're looking at new technology and becoming more efficient.
Even in our little world here in my firm, we've had that sort of rebellion and resistance. And the funny thing is, for me, no one comes out and says, well, we're not implementing this new program, boss. Sorry. They just don't do it. And it's subtle. Or they'll do a little bit and a little bit, a little bit. When you guys come around for follow-up after the initial install, whether it's your program or any program, you know, where are the failure points and why do they occur?
Quite often the failure points at follow-up have occurred because the original project, the expectations hadn't been set correctly with firm leadership. And when I talk about the expectations initial project stage, it's important to sit down with the firm leader in any business when you're looking at a change and say, okay, well, these are the deliverables that we need to achieve. Now, I'm going to be here for the next 3 days and it's going to be pretty easy while I'm here because I'm going to be here to talk to and people can ask me anything that they want. The real points of failure are after the implementation expert leaves, because people will fall back into their own habits.
Right.
And that is the biggest risk. And by ensuring that you generally disconnect old systems and make sure that they're not available anymore, You can avoid that kind of regression that happens after the initial excitement. And that's the first thing that you can do, is actually make sure that all the old systems just simply aren't available anymore. The old systems aren't available. You know, 9 times out of 10, people will learn how to use the new system. And then it's about just encouraging constant feedback to the supplier. So ensuring that a list of items is kept for questions at follow-up. Quite often that doesn't happen, so our consultants will come out for a follow-up and really need to drive the discussion.
Right.
It's important that the firm drives the discussion, because the firm is really making a lot of changes internally to suit the system. The system's not making changes to suit the firm. So the firm only the firm can communicate what their internal procedures are and how they're not fitting in with the system. And then that way we can give the correct advice.
Yeah, that's excellent, and I want to just give a little tip of the cap to Maggie Moriarty, an attorney in our office, who has just so taken the lead in all of our automation. Once she embraces it, then she's the magnet. So she doesn't need to push us to it as much as pull us to it, and I think that's what you're talking about. You guys want to be pulled where the firm is, as opposed to pushing the firm to implement.
Do you know, I wish every firm that we worked with had a Maggie. I spoke with Maggie on the way in, and I was so impressed at the enthusiasm around change. And we call them the leap champion when we install a firm. And creating a champion who is absolutely dedicated to making a change work is a tactic that works incredibly well. And having that champion creates positivity within all the other staff that may be finding it difficult. And it also gives them a whole new aspect to their career that they may never have had previously, becoming a systems expert.
It is funny because Maggie is an attorney. She's a successful attorney. She's done tax work and family work. She's an adoption expert. She's got her own 3 adopted children, but she is loving being sort of our implementation champion. And it's only happening because she will take those next steps. I get very excited about something. I'm willing to spend money because I believe I'm going to be here for another. I'm a 51. I'm going to work to age 133. So I have 82 more years to go.
You can do a lot in 82 years, Jeff.
You figure, right? And we talk about everything in quarterly increments. So in 2100, I'll be 133. So I'm calling it quits then. But I have a lot of quarters. If we do it in quarterly, we have 320 something quarters. So we try to do some tech piece and some automation piece and some marketing piece each quarter to just keep making progress. I want to ask you about that because I guess in the old days, and that was like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, you got a program, you implemented it, and that was the end of the conversation with the vendor. Maybe they have an update, and certainly they would send you a bill and say, oh, by the way, on December 15th, you owe us this, right? And if you don't update with us, guess what? All of your old stuff turns into a decrepit graveyard of data, right? So I believe that, at least from the user, the law firm and tech partnership is different now than it was a few years ago. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, I was actually visiting a firm 2 days ago in Hoboken. And I was talking with them about the partnership between the tech provider and themselves. And once upon a time, you'd know that the tech would break down eventually and then you'd be reselling it, or you'd write a whole new software program that was going to supersede your old software program. In the software as a service, the SaaS world, that's not the case anymore. So things are constantly being updated and new features are constantly being rolled out. And you don't have the old paradigm of pay for it once and you own it forever. That is good for the consumer in a number of ways, in that it means that tech companies are forced to constantly improve their software and ensure that their service levels are maintained and ensure that the customer is happy. Really, when we look at any type of enterprise in the modern world, the power is in the hand of the consumer much more than it has ever been before. So those relationships are incredibly important. I've done a lot of work recently on understanding different customer success models in some of the most successful companies in the world. And customer success is, if you look at the chief customer success officer in companies around the world, they're almost at the same level now as a chief operating officer and the chief executive officer, because ensuring that your customer is successful is ensuring that your business is successful. I mean, we have a core value at Leap that we never give up. We never, ever give up. And that is because we understand that that partnership can be hard sometimes. We deal in the world of change, and change requires commitment from both sides. And sometimes it's easy for people to give up when it's hard. And that relationship between customer and provider needs to be one in which nobody ever gives up to ensure success.
Well, that's sparking a lot of stuff in my brain because I look at law practice in my 20 years in practice and what it was, and look at the very successful practitioners 20 years ago, and I felt like it was all about the lawyer. So you were the king of personal injury or real estate or family law, and the people were lucky to be able to come to your altar. And now there's a lawyer on every corner that can do all of those things because in part of technology, and also because it's easier to find lawyers through a Google search and through social media, that, you know, for our firm, our path to growth has to be client focused. So I'm hearing you studying this. This sounds like almost an academic pursuit for you, this customer success model.
Sure. And I think that's something that a lot of businesses should consider, is that I quite often pick a text and that relates to something that's happening within the business at a time at any point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And the customer success book that I'd been reading was one that I decided was important for my entire executive team to read. So we spent an entire quarter studying that text and working out ways in which we could restructure the business to have a much better customer focus. And what that's resulted in is a number of things. It's actually resulted in us creating an entire customer success department. Customer success was previously looked after by our training and implementation consultants, and we found that was actually distracting them from their main job, which was implementing the software and ensuring that there's a great change event. So we created an entire customer success department. And we've also acquired some really, really good software that allows us to monitor the health of our customers much better than we've ever been able to before. And we actually have what's called a customer success health score for every single customer that we have.
Really?
And that's, you know, we know it's healthy through a number of different analytics that we use, and we get notifications when things start to drop. And, you know, an example would be, let's say Maggie left tomorrow. and we saw her job change on LinkedIn to another firm.
Right.
We know that customer success should be ringing you tomorrow and making right. sure we're getting the next Maggie trained up for you.
Also sending me a doctor as well. It'll be Jeff's health scorecard would be in pain as well. Well, that's really interesting. So you talk about, I'm going to bore into this if I can. So one piece is key employee connector between yourself and your program. What are some of the other categories of this score, if you don't mind sharing it?
Sure. So there's you know, with cloud software, there's a lot of high-level analytics available to us. The good thing is, with the attention we pay to data security, we can't see a lot more than basic usage.
Yeah.
But what we can see is things like, we may notice that you were using trust accounting really, really well, that you were receipting into your trust account every day for 6 weeks, and then all of a sudden you don't receipt anymore into your trust account. So we say, wow, maybe there's a problem there. Maybe we need more training. Maybe there's something not right with how our software is designed, and it allows us to come out and find out what the actual problem is. Whereas in the past, we would probably wait until we got a phone call from you saying, I'm really unhappy. We can actually get on the front foot now and be very proactive.
Wow.
We can see if you've saved 1,000 documents to our servers in a week, and then for the next 3 weeks you don't save any documents to our servers, then that's an indication that there might be something wrong.
Interesting.
So there are a number of different analytics that we use.
So these are sort of gross sort of data activity, almost an EKG for the business. You can see that there's a nice rhythm to the business. And if it flatlines, you guys likely have something to do about it. You can help.
That's right. That's right.
Interesting.
We can also monitor social media for promoters and detractors. So if there is somebody talking about Leap on LinkedIn, we can actually monitor that. It will say they're saying good things or bad things.
Yeah.
And then we can react accordingly.
Interesting. Really interesting. One of my questions was about data security, and I think back, 15 years ago, we made a commitment to scan all of our documents, and we were, you know, relatively young puppy firm, and people said, oh my God, what happens if you lose your media that you're scanning, your server goes down, your computer goes down, and the proof was the fact that we had stored in a basement, we had a pipe burst, and we wound up with every kind of mold of the rainbow on all these files and had to dispose of these files anyway. We tried like heck to recover them, but we simply couldn't. So there's challenges with physical storage as well as electronic storage, but now it's gone just so much further right out into the world. You mentioned the term cloud, and I think everyone knows what that means now, but then I had my friend Kellen Vorbach, who's my insurance guy from John B. Wright, one of our prior podcast guests. And I said, Kellen, what's the biggest risks for law firms these days? And he said, data security and breaches. So give us the warm and fuzzy out there, not just for your company, but for the tech world that you're in, that we're pretty safe, even though we're kind of putting important client stuff out to the cloud.
Sure. I think we entrusting our personal information to more and more people these days. And we look at the recent media attention around Facebook and how that's been misused. And last year there was the Apple hacks where there were celebrity photos that were leaked. And they're really the real bad news stories that make the news.
Right.
But ultimately what's happened is your data was a lot less secure 15 years ago when you required a server on-premise and you were taking backups and you were taking them home and storing them in a safe. And half the time you actually didn't even know whether the backup worked or not.
I have one of those in my home somewhere, Chris. Thanks for that.
So, you know, it reminds me of a story. I once visited a firm and I was trying to convince them to move to the cloud. And I said, you will be much more secure by being in the cloud. We spend millions and millions of dollars on security. We're on state-of-the-art systems inside Amazon Web Services. The data is replicated to multiple geographic locations. So you're in fact covered if there was, God forbid, a nuclear strike on the eastern seaboard. You'd have leak fire up on the western seaboard and people could keep working if there was still work to be done. So that sort of system is just not available to solo and small firms. But when I went through all those things with them, they said, no, look, we feel much safer with having our on-premise server. I said, would you mind showing me the server cupboard? So it was literally in a cupboard. So we went over to the cupboard that wasn't locked. And right next to that server was a safe. And I said, oh, the safe and the server, what goes into that safe? And they said, oh, that's where we put our backups. And I said, okay, well, you should probably keep an off-premise one as well. And they said, oh, no, that safe's fireproof. It's absolutely fine. So, okay, so a few weeks later, they phoned me and said, oh, we'd be interested in that cloud stuff you were talking about now. Right. And I said, well, can I ask why? And what happened was that the firm was burgled. And not only did they take the server, but having a safe sitting in the room next to the server meant that the safe also went missing. So, yeah, the burglar got home and opened it. Yeah, if he was able to get the safe open, he found a USB sitting in there. But, yeah, it was priceless to the firm and worth nothing to the burglar. And that's the sort of risk that you have. I talk about things like blind subpoenas quite often and what happens when you have the authorities come seeking information about data from people that host law firm data. Right. So if you look at Google, if you look at Apple, quite often what will happen is the FBI will go to, say, Google, or it'll go to Microsoft and say, you need to hand over all this information. And they'll decide whether they comply with that or not.
Right.
And there's statistics available online about how often they comply, and they comply quite regularly. If you look at legal software providers, we're a bit different to companies like Google and Apple and Microsoft in that we don't sell to consumers. So the average consumer weighs up the risk about convenience versus convenience versus data protection and thinks, well, it's a lot more convenient to do it this way, so I'll take the risk. Attorneys, of course, have ethical obligations that they need to comply with. So legal software companies need to ensure that their core client base is able to comply with their ethical requirements. And you know, we've come across scenarios where the authorities have come and said, we need to see John Smith's data. And we say, well, John Smith owns the data. You need to go and ask John Smith to see the data. Right. We just simply store it for him. So we have seen those sorts of scenarios. But what you have there is a little bit of an added layer of protection because we're equipped to deal with that. And I quite often think what would happen if you were out of the office and you had an inexperienced receptionist and the authorities came in looking for information about one of your clients, would the receptionist let them in? Yeah, they may very well let them in. Sure. We don't know. But we're equipped to deal with that sort of situation. So if you think about the modern data security versus having on-premise servers, the modern data security is much, much better than it's ever been before.
Well, I buy it, so hopefully a few people listening will buy it as well. So, you know, in that light, you know, I wanted to switch to this term I learned only a couple of years ago, and I say I know the term, API, right? And it has something to do with an interface from one program to another program. You want to talk about that? Because when I have looked at software, looked at automation, I learned, well, this one sticks to that one and sticks to that one. I feel like I'm doing Legos. And I'm saying, hold on a second. I don't want to be the Lego builder of software. I don't want to be the one making those decisions and paying different vendors. So speak to that, you know, sort of where do law firms want to be in the realm of how many APIs are sticking to your software?
Yeah, we have an API. We really only use that right now for things like cost recovery software. So where you might have a printer and you want to record every single piece of paper that's copied through it and bill it back to your client. That's where we really use our API. Our position on APIs is a little bit different to other providers in that our view is that if there is a mechanism that or a function that's required by 80% of our client base or more, then we should actually write that ourselves rather than link up with another product that that does it. What APIs have allowed businesses to do is grow in verticals. So a company that's been really, really successful at using their API to grow their business is a company called Xero. Xero is an accounting product out of New Zealand that's also in Australia, the United States, and the UK. And what they've actually done is created a marketplace for add-ons. And those add-ons are actually feeding customers back to Xero. So we find that companies that are very, very successful with using APIs, it's the company that's able to build an ecosystem around themselves with their API that is generally quite successful at doing that. But what you do risk is ending up with a patchwork of software.
And I guess that's what I'm talking about. Patchwork. Yeah. I should use that word.
Yeah. And when you end up with a patchwork of software, you don't really know where to go to get one source of the truth. And it goes back to what I said about earlier about having one source of the truth. The other thing with a patchwork of software is that the links between them can sometimes be unstable. If one provider changes their API endpoints and doesn't tell the other, doesn't tell the marketplace, then everything can break down and then you don't know whose fault it is and it takes a long time to sort out the problem. But it has allowed companies to get to market a lot more quickly by avoiding writing functionality that would have taken them several years to do otherwise. But I would always say avoid a patchwork where possible.
Yeah, right. That's what we don't want. We don't want a whole bunch of vendors stuck together. And then I use the analogy of a string of lights that has one light out and then the whole string doesn't work. We can't tolerate that at all. So I missed one thing. Let me go back. Good cross-examination allows you to go back. So you mentioned the customer success model, and you mentioned the text. Is that a book that you guys are using as your sort of guiding light there? Can you tell me what that is?
Yep. So it's called it is called Customer Success, and it's available on Amazon.
Okay. Do you know if it's written by an individual or is it written by a company? Or
I can provide you that information to put in your footnotes.
I'd love to put that
if you'd like. Yeah.
And when people that come and talk to me, that honor me to come and talk to me, mention a book, I buy the book and read the book because I want to know what you know.
Well, I've got plenty of books that I could recommend, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, feel free because, you know, I hope the whole purpose of this podcast is to talk to what myself was 20 years ago, 20 years dumber. So I'd like to get smarter a little bit faster and also share the thought process, and I'll just talk for 2 seconds. A book that Maggie and I have been working on is called Traction by Gino Wickman. And it's about taking your vision, attaching your company to it, and getting traction in your vision and just taking those steps. This 90-day thing comes from Traction, also comes from our participation in a coaching program called Strategic Coach. We do the things in 90 days, and it kind of forces you to both make a plan for 90 days and also importantly look back 90 days and count your successes. Do you guys do that for your company?
I think it's really impressive that you do that. We've actually been doing that since 2006. Yeah. Our business visited there is a business coach. He's known for being an expert in scaling up small businesses, and his name is Vern Harnish.
Oh, yeah,
and he writes a book called Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, and he talks a lot about another expert in the field, Jim Collins, and refers a lot to his books like Good to Great and Great by Choice. So what we did in 2006 was have our very first, and I say we loosely, I wasn't there at the time, Leap at the time, had its very first, what we call our quarterly strategic meeting. And at that quarterly strategic meeting, we set what was called our BHAG at the time, and that was our big, hairy, audacious goal, for those that haven't heard the terminology before. And in 2006, the BHAG was set at having 8,000 firms using Leap or a Leap product by 2015. Now, at that point in time, there were only 8,000 law firms in Australia. So we knew in 2006 that we were going to need to go overseas back then and expand into other markets. At the same time, we also set our core values and we set our brand promise, and also set for the first time a quarterly strategic plan, which sets three-year targets, 12-month targets, and three-month targets. And then what we do on those three-month targets is actually assign them to an individual on the executive team. So I might have item number one, and that item number one is the most important thing that the company needs to do for that quarter to work towards our BHAG. So ultimately, everything feeds up to the BHAG. 3-month goals feed into the 12-month ones, the 12-month goals feed into the 3-year ones, and the 3-year ones feed into the BHAG. And then from that quarterly top five, we call it, so we put five items on there, they filter through the entire company. So I might say, okay, well, I need to visit 45 firms this month and get feedback on our new billing software. Mm-hmm. And then that filters through to people throughout the business, and they have their own top five goals as well. And basically everybody in our entire organization, every quarter, gets a new set of top five goals that they're working towards. And there was an article in the Huffington Post about the way we've done this, because it is a Vern Harnish teaching. But what we've done is we've actually attached remuneration to those top five goals. So it allows us to get high-performing people into the door and give them a little bit more to achieve a lot more for us.
Right.
And it works incredibly well, and it's allowed us to scale up the business globally. And I think if we weren't doing that, we probably wouldn't have been able to expand globally.
Well, you get me charged up, because you know, I'm a complete devotee to these ideas that you're sharing, and you guys are just miles and miles ahead of us. But you know, take this to who we're talking to, which is probably small law firms who are busy folks serving clients, running to court, doing closings, doing settling cases, and just sort of trying to hang on. Can they implement some of this Vern Harnish and Jim Collins and Gina Wickman stuff?
Absolutely. I think the first thing I would start with would be a daily stand-up huddle. And that's something that we've recommended over the years to firms when they're implementing Leap. As we say, well, the best way for you to get a really concise list of questions for us when we come back to talk to you is to have a daily stand-up huddle about Leap. And what would happen is everybody that was in the building for the day would come in at a specific time, and we always say make it a very specific time. So ours is at 2:06. My executive huddle is at 2:06 every day. And it's because if you set it at 2, people will turn up at 5 past and they kind of stroll in when they feel like it. But at 2:06, everybody's always there. So, and it's a stand-up huddle, and you make it very, very quick. So you have one what's up, and for us it's your most important thing before the huddle and the most important thing that you're doing after the huddle. And then you say what your roadblocks are. So you go around the room individually and say, oh, do you have a roadblock? Do you have a roadblock? And it means that everybody is in the room at the same time, and they can handle those roadblocks quickly, efficiently, and professionally without having them bounce around the organization for 2 weeks before they get solved. And then you have a last word. And that takes no more than 15 minutes. Everybody remains standing through the entire huddle. And that's something that any business can implement. And it absolutely increases business alignment, because without business alignment, no business can be successful if one department doesn't know what the other's doing. And it's the same in a law firm. If the receptionist doesn't know what the legal secretaries are doing, and they don't know what the paralegals are doing, or the family law department doesn't know what the real estate department are doing, then you know, it becomes very disjointed. And you can have everybody on the same page very easily with a stand-up huddle.
That is really great. I am really glad that we got that nugget out of you here. All right. Well, we get down to just a, a few more. And what I ask folks, and I think you said you've listened to some of the podcasts, is a big ask. So, you know, although we come to this world in a very different perspective, I'm a practitioner and you're a vendor for many of my colleagues, and some people say competitors. I don't buy that. I'm not competing with any of the lawyers. We all want to do an excellent job for clients. That's how I look at it. So the big ask, what would you ask all your clients and your future clients to, if they could implement, that would make the world better, both for them, for their clients, and for the vendors as well?
Sure. Go paperless. You have the ability now to have one source of truth, and that source of truth can include all of your documentation that relates to your legal matters. It means that everything is easily accessible in one place at all times. It ensures that you can offer a better service to your customer. If they phone you, their information is at hand. You don't have to rummage around for a file. You don't have to say, please wait 5 minutes while I get your information. You can have it all right at your fingertips. If your adversary rings, you can have all of that right at your fingertips. I, in fact, met with an attorney once for lunch, and they had forgotten that they had a video conference with a judge, and they were actually able to look at their file on their phone, brief themselves, excuse themselves, have the conference and come back in and complete lunch, all while time recording everything on the phone. So if you go paperless and you digitize, you're actually helping yourself run a much better business. You're providing a much better service to your clients. But at the same time, eliminating paper helps the environment too. So it helps everybody.
I love that. That is great advice, Chris. And I believe that if you don't do that, you're going to be gone, because so many courts already are requiring a paperless submission, an electronic submission to federal courts for many years, and other courts are catching up very, very quickly. So that's great advice. Now I come to the part where people are always saying to me, well, if you have vendors on, they're just going to make the whole thing into a commercial, which you have not done. But now I will give you as much time as you want. I usually say 30-second elevator pitch, but give us the 30-second, and then we can talk a little bit about Leap. And as you know, we've implemented it only for 6 months, but we are digging deeper and deeper and deeper. And anyone who's going to embrace Leap, or whatever vendor you embrace, use all of what you're paying for. Don't just kind of get stuck in your old ways and just use a little piece of the software. So give me the 30-second, we can talk a little bit more about Leap.
Sure. Thanks, Jeff. I've tried not to make it a commercial, but I am very passionate about all things legal tech, and my reference point is always Leap. So sure. It's what I know. But you can apply a lot of what I've said today to any software that you use, and a lot of what I've said to running your business as well. So if you could, if you take the word Leap out of it and just apply the core concepts, you'll be able to apply it across the across businesses, no matter what you use. But Leap is a software provider to solo and small law firms. We made a conscious decision when we set our original strategy in 2006 to sell only to solo and small law firms. And for us, that's 1 to 25 people working at the firm. And the reason for that is because solo and small law firms need efficiency to operate, they need efficiency to be competitive, and they need efficiency to offer their clients a great service. Whereas large law firms, and I mentioned to you before, I always think of the TV show Suits, and I think of Harvey Specter sitting there sipping a scotch with his time recorder going in the background, and the customer being, or the client being billed for it. Those sorts of practices don't need Leap. They need inefficiency, they make money off inefficiency, and that's not what we do. We do efficiency. We look after firms that work in the common areas of law. When I say the common areas of law, if you think general practice and you think real estate, family law, employment law, personal injury, litigation, bankruptcy, all those sorts and more. But if you think pure general practice type work, that's what we do. Our big differentiator is that we offer a full library of automated legal forms. So in the past, where you'd have to go to websites and try and find forms before you went and filed a particular motion for a particular case, you can simply go into Leap, open up your electronic matter within Leap, and run those documents straight from Leap. And it will populate everything for you as long as you've captured all the information that you need to capture. And you only need to capture it once. So it speeds up form production exponentially. The other thing we do is we offer everything in one spot. So we're a cloud solution that allows you to save all of your documents onto the Matter so that they're available from all locations and all devices. And in addition to that, we do the time recording, the trust accounting, the billing, the business reporting, and everything in between. So Leap is an all-encompassing practice management solution that means that you can acquire Leap and then that's all you need to run your legal business.
That's great. So the next piece is, how do people find you, Leap, social media, websites? What's a good way for folks to dip their toe in the water?
Sure. Leap.us, that's LEAP.us, is our website. And that's the best place to have a really good look at what the software provides. You can also get us on LinkedIn at Leap Legal Software USA. We're also on Facebook and we're also on Twitter. You can also follow me directly on Twitter at Leap Chris Stock, and feel free to reach out and ask for any information or any advice. I'm always here to give advice when it comes to the business management side of things as well. I've seen a lot of law firms and I love to be of assistance.
Well, this is really super. I really want to thank you for coming in. You were kind enough to come to my office for this, which makes it very intimate and fun for me and hopefully a lot of fun for the listeners as well.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me, Jeff, and look forward to the next time.
All right. We'll have to do a round two sometime.
It's Attorney Dan Straffy. Thanks for listening to The Bold Sidebar. Share The Bold Sidebar with your lawyer friends and professional colleagues. Please subscribe on iTunes and check out the show notes for the episode highlights and links to resources discussed on the show. Give us your feedback on social media at Horn Law Group, Divorce in a Minute, and of course, The Bold Sidebar. And tell us what you want to hear and who you want to hear it from.
Hey everybody, it's Jeff again. Need to find us? Check us out on the web at hornlawgroup.net or give us a call at 732-736-9300. Thanks.